This episode of Armchair Explorer is brought to you by the Nissan Rogue Rock Creek. Adventure calls in the first ever Nissan Rogue Rock Creek. Learn more at nissanusa.com. You guys are probably familiar with Sierra Club as the largest grassroots environmental organization in the country. But did you know that they also lead over 250 active outdoor adventures every year? Whether you're looking to backpack, kayak, raft, or even dog sled, you can be sure to find a trip that feels like it was designed for you with Sierra Club outings. New trips have just launched and spots fill up fast. So go ahead, browse and book your 2025 trip today at sierraclub.org/outings and use the code armchair to get $100 off. Go and check it out, sierraclub.org/outings. Hey guys, welcome to Armchair Explorer. My name's Aaron Miller. I'm a travel writer and your host. And today is one of our immersion episodes. We're going to go on location to Badlands National Park in South Dakota. They call the Badlands the land of light and stone. I think that sounds really beautiful. And despite its name, it is beautiful. It's a geologic tapestry of sharply eroded buttes and pinnacles and spires and ancient fossil beds and a prairie dog town that was, let's just say, very vocal about its displeasure about seeing our host, Brian Thacker. Brian's done a bunch of different stuff. You may remember him from previous episodes, but he's also a best-selling travel author. He's written a number of books. And if you want, you can scroll back down the feed to find an episode I did with him many, many moons ago called No Google, No Guidebook, No Clue, about the time that he visited three of the tiniest, least well-known places in the world randomly without a single bit of planning or any knowledge whatsoever of the country, culture, what to do, where to stay, no phone, no internet, no nothing. It's a fun episode. And spoiler alert, he ended up hanging out with the king of one of those places, because that's the sort of guy that Brian is. So check that out. Check out some of his other books. One of them, by the way, is called Rule Number 4, No Sex on the Bus. It makes you wonder what rule number 1, 2, and 3 is, doesn't it? But for now, it is an adventure of an altogether different sort. If you're a national park junkie like me, I think you're really, really going to enjoy this one. So welcome to the place where bad is good.
The Lakota people call it Mako Sisha. It means Badlands. It's probably not a name that a tourism office would come up with. It sounds more like a desolate and forbidding landscape. So, is it a fitting name? Let's find out. Roaming herds of buffalo, the Wild West. Mountains, monuments, dinosaurs, and pioneers. Welcome to South Dakota, the land of infinite variety. I'm Brian Thacker, I'm a travel writer, and this is episode 8, Where Bad is Good.
Down this way.
This is Ed Welsh, the education specialist for Badlands National Park. I thought we were going to look at geological features instead.
I just picked this spot because it's kind of random, and we stopped right here, and I'm telling you, I've already found fossils right away.
Really?
So there's chunks of bone here and here.
Oh, wow.
There's one right behind your foot, too. There's one between your foot, between your feet.
Wow. How old would this fossil be?
Well, see, we're at the base of the pole slide member of the Brule Formation, so we're just over 32 million years old.
That's just incredible.
Once you start finding these, you can't stop. If there's one, there's usually more.
I wasn't expecting that. We'd just be walking along and they'd be just lying around everywhere. And, you know, it's not like it's a bone from a bird that died 2 years ago.
No,
the fact that it's bone that's something that's 30 million years ago, it's crazy.
The reason all these fossils and bones are everywhere is that the Badlands are eroding fast. on average, almost an inch per year. And when there has been a big rain, which we had the previous day, bones and fossils are spread around the dry ground like scattered candy.
And there's some teeth.
Oh, yeah, some teeth. Yeah. What's that from?
These are from an oreodont. They're an extinct relative of camels. Some people like to compare them to pigs or sheep.
Yeah, there's so many of them.
And there's two skeletons here. So yeah, if I had to give them a common name, sheep, deer, camel, pigs makes the most sense. And one year we had one of our rangers, he went out on a hike. He found a big heel bone. We were able to collect it and get it back to the lab. And then we go, this one's really big. It's way bigger than the one we have mounted. And then we pulled some bones from a bison and the size was a match. So this animal had a heel bone that's about the same size as the ones you would find in a bison, except it's a big murder pig.
Yeah, big murder pig.
We walk further in, but we are nowhere even near a marked trail, stumbling over endless dusty gullies and ridges, and at times it really felt like we were walking on the surface of the moon.
The Badlands has a pretty interesting story that goes back forever, really, geologically, but historically, Europeans that started coming out here through the fur trade started realizing there's all this prairie, and then all of a sudden you get this really weird group of outcrops that stand out. Some of these fur traders started finding fossils in them. The first fossil was described here in 1846. It was a jawbone to a giant animal called a brontothere. And just to put that 1846 in context, dinosaur was invented in 1842, just a few years before that. So we just started learning what dinosaurs were. So we can point to this area and say, this is where paleontology begins in the American West.
Oh, wow.
The area certainly was a gold mine, or you might say a dino mine for paleontologists. It contributed greatly to understanding North American prehistoric life.
If you're driving through South Dakota from the Missouri River onto the Black Hills, you notice there's a lot of rolling hills and very black sediment. That's mud from the seafloor. So it's the age of dinosaurs there, but we almost never find dinosaurs in it because it's all marine. There's stuff in the water that the dinosaurs probably couldn't even deal with. So things like mosasaurs, there were giant squid, there were sea turtles about the size of a car. Some of the words I've heard for the Seaway is Hell's Aquarium. It's considered one of the deadliest seas of all time because of all the big scary things that want to eat everything else.
Scientists estimate they've only found fossilized evidence of less than 1% of all the species that have ever lived. And most layers of sediments that settled in the bottom of the prehistoric oceans are still underwater today. So the discoveries made in the Badlands from when it was Hell's Aquarium helped scientists to learn about the huge and complex ecosystems that thrived beneath the ancient waves. Complete fossils of ancient animals have also been found in the Badlands, and only a short drive away from our hike is the Ben Rifle Visitor Center, which is home to the Fossil Preparation Lab. Here you can watch technicians up close as they clean and prepare fossils.
So Morgan's been working on all these bones from this little fossil horse quarry. Mary's working on a saber cat, and then Lexi's working on a rhinoceros. Oh. So everything in the field comes through here, and the cool thing about this is as we're figuring all of this out, the public is here with us as we're doing it, and that's, I think, the coolest thing.
Did I hear right? You said rhinoceros?
Yeah, rhinos were native to North America for about 50 million years. Right now you're used to seeing things like bison and bighorn sheep. Yeah. Those are new arrivals. And North America, before the last 2 million years, was a lot more exotic. Even during the Ice Age, we were the Serengeti before there was the Serengeti in Africa. Camels originate in North America, you know, so when we find camels here, they exist nowhere else on Earth. So you probably wouldn't recognize the North American faunal landscape. You would think it was Africa if you ever came out here about 30 million years ago or even after. Rhinos are a pretty common animal in North American fauna up until about 5 million years ago.
All right.
Then they go extinct. We have a bone bed in the park that's just, it was full of rhinoceros skeletons. We called it the Big Pig Dig. Some of these animals are going to be weird and alien. Some of them are going to be kind of familiar. Yeah. like you're going to be familiar with the rhinos, the horses, the cats, dogs. When we see dogs here, we're looking at the first dogs that ever lived.
Oh, wow.
And dogs are another North American animal. We don't find them anywhere else on planet Earth at this time. But at the same time, we're watching some of these older groups die out. So instead of cats and dogs, we had these weird things called creodonts. And after this, there's no more. So we're watching how animals respond when planet Earth changes. And every one of these things has a lesson to tell us is when things change, either through climate, environment, or otherwise, you've got three options. You can adapt to those changes and keep going, or you can move away where that environment, that world you like to live in still exists. Because whenever we find brontotheres, we also find alligators. So we used to have alligators here in South Dakota, now we don't. So they're happy in Florida now.
They retired to Florida.
Yeah, they retired to Florida. You know, you stick around the Great Plains for about 60 some million years and decide I'm going to retire down south.
There are lots of dead and ancient creatures in the Badlands, but it also has an abundance of living critters. We head out to the northern part of the park where buttes, pinnacles and spires are replaced by vast prairies, a remnant of one of the world's great grasslands.
We have black-footed ferrets here, which are like the most endangered mammal pretty much in North America that exist in the biggest population that's wild that anybody knows of anywhere in the world between us and the Forest Service.
This is Paul Rugg, the lead biotech for wildlife at Badlands National Park.
They were down to about 18 animals at one time. They thought they were extinct for a while.
Wow.
And then they found a remnant population out in Meteetse, Wyoming, when a rancher's dog showed up with one. He was like, hey, that's that weird thing. Oh, that's one of those black-footed ferrets that the Fish and Wildlife Service was really wanting to get a hold of. There's roughly 37 in the park that actually exist within the park boundary, and then probably around 150 between the park and the Forest Service around it. And it's a continually large effort every year to, you know, map your number of prairie dog town acres, because that's the only thing that they really eat. That's the only place they live for those ferrets. And then to turn around and spotlight ferrets, let's head this way and not walk through the big pile of poison ivy.
We come over a rise and almost walk into bighorn sheep grazing by the side of the road, while ahead of us, an ocean of stone waves disappears into infinite stretches of grass. But soon, we are unwelcome visitors.
Well, I can hear them.
Yep, and that's a good sign.
And what's that? Is that prairie dog warning the rest?
Yep, he's trying to tell them, hey, look, there's somebody, something has showed up in this end of the town, and they actually have a very complex vocabulary.
Prairie dogs, which aren't anything like dogs and are more like tailless squirrels that live underground, are very social and live in groups called prairie dog towns. One of these towns can cover as much as 1,000 acres and consists of a series of connected burrows. Amazingly, prairie dogs were unknown to Europeans until one was captured by Lewis and Clark and sent to President Thomas Jefferson.
They have different ones that'll switch off being essentially on watch duty, like other ones forage, and you do your thing and you keep an eye out for a while and I'll watch your back, you watch mine.
These prairie dog towns are like real towns. They are subdivided into wards and each ward has a sentry. A bark is sounded as a warning for all to dive into their burrows until the all clear signal is given. But it's not just us that prairie dogs are weary of. Bobcats like prairie dogs for dinner.
They can pop into a prairie dog town and they'll sit next to a mound, especially in the winter, and just wait and listen. You know, nothing's happened, nothing's happened. All of a sudden you see them just jump up and jam a paw down that hole and hook into something and drag it out, because, you know, the prairie dog is coming up and he's hurt him.
Yeah.
And it's better to get the jump on him before he, you know, pops up and looks and sees you and then goes, oh crud, I'm gonna get back down.
While we're talking, a herd of about 40 bison casually saunter right towards us, puffing and snorting and stirring up dust in their wake.
We usually like to say at least a solid 100 yards.
Yeah.
Farther is usually better because they're faster than you might ever think they are. Especially you get bulls and stuff that are just laying there and they look lazy, docile, or maybe even dead to people. And it is amazing how fast they can snap up and be on their feet and then move.
It's also amazing that bison are even here today. During the 1800s, an estimated 10,000 hunters poured onto the plains to collect bounties on valuable bison hides, to a point where 5,000 were being killed a day and nearly hunted into extinction. Through conservation efforts, the bison population in the Badlands went from zero to the 1,200 that reside in the park today. When settlers arrived, they turned much of these open plains into cattle farms. And today, on the outskirts of Badlands National Park, ranchers are still riding horseback across the plains. And here, you too can jump on a horse and head out onto the range.
This episode of Armchair Explorer is brought to you by Nissan. It is time to fuel your inner adventure in the award-winning Nissan Rogue Rock Creek. From rocky trails to snowy roads, there are plenty of places to show off this SUV thanks to its intelligent all-wheel drive. And here at Armchair Explorer, I am thrilled to continue to partner with Nissan because, as all you guys know, this show is all about that too. It's about connecting with that inner and outer adventurer that you are. And there's no better vehicle for that than the Nissan Rogue Rock Creek. So thanks to its intelligent around view monitor with off-road mode, the Rogue Rock Creek helps adventurers like us to navigate around narrow obstacles in tough terrain. I've tried that and it's not easy without that. Plus, with lava red contrast stitching and Rock Creek embroidery inside, you are surrounded in style no matter where you go. So you get the best of both worlds, style and rugged off-road adventure. So thank you again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Armchair Explorer. Adventure calls in the first ever Nissan Rogue Rock Creek. Learn more at nissanusa.com. Intelligent all-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions. Intelligent around-view monitor cannot eliminate blind spots and may not detect every object. Drivers should always turn and check surroundings before driving. See owner's manual for safety information. Hey guys, the holidays are here. I'm super excited about that. I hope you guys are too. I've got a bunch of family coming over for Christmas. We're going to eat too much, play some games, get some skiing in. I will be wearing my ski pants for that. It's a little cold at 12,000 feet. But I probably could wear my Doers. So if you listen to the show regularly, you probably heard me shouting about these guys before. Doer make denim and lifestyle apparel that are built for doing. They're super stretchy and comfortable. They're also super cool. I wear them to work as well, but I also wear them on the bike, on the trail. I actually probably would be able to ski in them because they've got stuff for all seasons, including some awesome winter gear, which is made with temperature regulating fabrics that work great for cold winter days and keep your legs nice and toasty, but don't make you overheat when you're wearing them in other seasons because no one, after all, likes sweaty legs. So thanks to Doer for sponsoring the show. I've met these guys. They're just like you and me. They love adventure and I know they're proud to help bring these stories to you. So check out Doer's flagship stores in LA or Denver if that's your neighborhood or shop online at shopdoer.com/explore. Right now, you guys are going to get 20% off your first purchase when you use that exclusive URL, shopdoer.com/explore. It's such a great deal. Put it on your Christmas list. I bet Santa wears some Doers too. You'll get 20% off. I don't think he even does unless you listen to the show. So go now to shopdoer.com/explore. Happy holidays.
All right, you guys ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. We're gonna head out this gate here. Yeah, just give them a little kick. Yeah.
This is Casey Donald from Hurley Butte horseback riding tours.
My great grandparents, they got married and they lived over in Mitchell, South Dakota on about 80 acres of land. This is the early 1900s.
Yeah.
And my grandpa had always wanted to have a ranch and like more acreage for his growing family. So he traded sight unseen, never been out to the Badlands. It's completely different out here than it is in the eastern part of the state.
Yeah.
Over there, you can grow crops really easily. The Badlands is named appropriately. It is simply bad land to grow anything. There's not a lot of water. It's very desert-like. But they traded for 160 acres, so it was double the acreage, and my grandpa was planning on ranching out here. And it was actually a homestead plot that they traded for. So they moved out here in 1918, never been out here. I always wonder what grandma said to Grandpa or the look she gave him when they showed up to the property, because it is actually just a one-room shack and they already had 10 kids. So they had 13 altogether and 12 survived. And Grandma actually finished raising the kids here in the Badlands by herself, because my great-grandpa passed away when my grandpa, who was one of the younger ones, was 6. I come from fairly tough stock.
All right, so. That sounds like it.
Casey's family became cattle ranchers, and Casey, like her relatives before her, spent a lot of time riding horseback and herding cattle.
We didn't have like a four-wheeler until I was maybe in high school or almost high school, so we did everything horseback.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we would drive the cattle over there, and then we would have to ride back. So round trip, it was about 20 miles of riding. But the very first year, I was probably 11 or 12, and my dad went with us so that we would know the way. And then after that, he would say, "You know where to go?" And I was in charge of getting my brother there and the cattle there safely.
Yep.
And then we would ride back, and this is long before cell phones. Mom just didn't see us until we got back.
As we are talking, we are riding through an endless sea of grass. Rising sharply ahead of us are rocky buttes.
But we're gonna ride around the backside and we'll ride up on top of the butte. So, and then you can see the whole basin.
We certainly feel like we're in a Western movie riding through this.
Yeah, it does kinda, doesn't it? And that's kind of the feel that we like to do with the trail rides, is give people the most feel that they can, like it feels like a Western movie, or that you're riding in the West and in the plains, and kind of give them that feel.
As we climb to the top of the butte and look out across the plains, it feels for a moment that I really am in a Western movie. The Badlands have been shaped by geological forces, nature, wildlife, and humans. But whether it's going off trail in the national park and stumbling upon ancient fossils, or riding through open plains under the shadows of giant colourful buttes, you can still feel and find that raw and wild beauty of the Badlands. This land has been forged by time. It's hard to fathom how much time that is, but Ed Welsh has a pretty good idea.
I do what astronomers do. I try to make the big things sound smaller so I can understand them better. And one method I use is I actually made a geologic timescale out of paracord, and I have every inch is a million years. So if we walk back about 30 inches, we're back to the Badlands. We go about 38 inches, we're at the beginning of the Badlands. We go back to 65 inches, we're at the end of the dinosaurs. I laid this thing out for school kids on their school gymnasium floor, and we took it back to the formation of the Earth, and we went 4.5 times back and forth in that gym. And here's, you know, Stegosaurus, and here's Triceratops, and then here's you, or a mammoth, and you get to see things like, well, holy smokes, that T-Rex is closer to me than it is to that Stegosaurus.
Yeah.
So a T-Rex is more likely to use your cell phone than it is to eat a Stegosaurus. By about a factor of 15 million years. It's wild things to think about. Our species is really the last half inch, but for recorded human history, and then a little extra, on that time scale, 5,000 years is about the thickness of a sheet of paper. You start to realize with this site and other sites is life has been around a long time. We were never really apart for most of it, and we're really just a small part in this tree of life on planet Earth.
When the Badlands was first suggested to be a national park, it was almost named Wonderland National Park. I prefer the name Badlands, but this park is guaranteed to instill wonder in anyone who visits. Thanks for joining me. If you'd like to create your own South Dakota stories, you can find out how to do so by going to travelsouthdakota.com. You'll find lots of inspiration and ideas and everything else you need to know to plan your great South Dakota adventure. Thanks to everyone who featured in this episode, Ed Welsh and Paul Rugg from the Badlands National Park, and Casey Donald from Hurley Butte Horseback. If you enjoyed this episode, stay tuned for our next one, where I go up 2 pan sizes after I eat my way around South Dakota. So hit that subscribe button and follow us wherever you get your shows. This series was produced by Armchair Productions, the audio experts for the travel industry. Find out more at armchair-productions.com. I'm Brian Thacker. I wrote and presented the show. Jason Patton recorded in the field, mixed and did the sound design, and Aaron Miller is the executive producer. See you next time.
From Academy Award-winning actor Matthew McConaughey's soulful and humorous picture book to New York Times bestselling author Kristen Hannah's The Women, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books is an author interview podcast unlike any other. In 30 minutes or less, each episode of this chart-topping and Webby Award-winning show dives deep beneath the cover, fostering friendship and camaraderie, support and curiosity, connection and compassion. Hosted by me, Zibby Owens, author, bookstore owner, and head of what the LA Times called the Zibbyverse, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books has something for everyone, whether you're a mom like me or simply a busy reader. So don't miss out. Follow Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening now. New episodes are released every weekday, bringing books to life.
I did consider Barney a friend, and he's still a friend to this day.
The idea of Barney is something that I want to live up to. You know, I love you, you love me. I call it the purple mantra.
Barney taught me how to be a man.
Generation Barney, a podcast about the media we loved as kids and how it shapes us. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.